Hi, I'm Mike Aswitz. Welcome to another episode of In Focus. Today, we're going to look at the second quarter and look at it from an investment review and outlook perspective. Joining me today is Joel Baker. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you, Mike.
Great to have you on. Let's dive into the macroeconomic data. As consumers, on top of all of our minds is inflation. So let's look at the CPI data.
What's that showing? CPI numbers, Mike? Yeah, that's a great one. Inflation for sure. And interest rates is on top of everyone's mind, it seems. So when we look at those two areas, that the trends are going in the right direction, both in Canada and the U.S. And actually ours is coming in slightly better than the American market. So theirs is about 2.7, where ours is 3.0. So the good news there is both regions are honing in on sort of their target ranges, set by the central bankers. So clearly raising interest rates was the right thing to do in honing inflation back. So that seems to be the trend so far in the CPI front.
So we'll get to inflation. Interest rates. Well, and it's all linked, right? So let's talk about the GDP.
Yep. What do we see? Yeah, that ties right in there. Kind of the opposite holds true there, Mike. So again, they're both trending the right direction, which is the good news story, but the U.S. is actually coming in slightly better than ours. So their GDP growth is about 2.8%. We're lagging about a point behind. So we're coming in about 1.7%, but the good news is we're trending up in the right direction. So again, that's good news from the economic standpoint.
Okay. So from both CPI, GDP, from any indications looking forward, you have any thoughts on that front? Do you think the trends are going to continue? Or
that's a great one, Mike. Yeah. So we watch those very closely, as you know, and so our viewers will know. But I wouldn't say we're out of the woods yet when it comes to the economic indicators. There's two very key indicators that are still, if they're not signaling economic recession, they're at least signaling slowdown. And so again, those are sort of a cross between interest rates and the inverted yield curve, which we'll talk about here in a second. And the other is the ISM numbers, which is the manufacturing data. So they're trending below an all important historic baseline of 50. So those are two key indicators. They've got a very, very good track record of indicating recessions, and both of them are smelling like that, Mike. So that's kind of what we're seeing in those economic indicators. Probably more interesting is the fact that what we hear from clients. And what I mean by that, Mike, is we're in a pretty interesting and I'd almost say unique chair, and that we talk to many, many different clients across many, many different industries. And I must admit, those conversations seem to seek a slowdown coming. We're hearing words like significant slowdown. We're hearing words like price discounting, their margins going down, even layoffs in some cases, which is pretty unusual compared to what we've just went through. And by that, Mike, I simply mean that during COVID, a lot of our clients had not only record years, but they had record years, and they'd be having record years on top of that if they could find workers.
Right.
So the fact we're starting to hear this language is really starting to unfold as far as there's a softness coming or a softness in the air. So that's kind of an important gauge as well.
And related to workers, we are seeing unemployment creep up a bit too. Correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So with all those macroeconomic numbers, let's talk. You mentioned it. Everyone's focused on interest rates, what Bank of Canada, what the U.S. Fed is doing. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Again, it's kind of a tale of two stories there, if you will. So in Canada here, we just lowered our interest rates, and that was pretty much baked into the market, to use that phrase, Mike. When you look at the American, predictions or consensus numbers, they were pretty much spot on. They thought the Federal Reserve wouldn't cut now, but it's almost 100% probability of an expected cut in their September meeting. So that's right. Kind of what we're looking at here. And, if the numbers are right, when I must admit they change about every other week, but the numbers right now are indicating another two cuts beyond that in both the American and the Canadian market. So that's kind of what's going on from an interest rate perception. Probably more important here is back to the yield curve. We talked about that being an economic indicator, and sure enough, we still are inverted, which basically means that short-term rates are higher than long-term rates, which is a hard one to grasp. But the good news is the inversion isn't quite as steep as it was in prior podcasts that we had, Mike. So the steepening is flattening, if that makes any sense. So it's getting to be good news.
Okay, that is good news. So, and since we're on the interest rate, a couple other areas, let's talk about the spreads between, say, corporate debt and government debt. Any changes in direction there?
Yeah, and they use the word spreads have been coming in, or just a way to say that is tightening. And really what that means, Mike, is the spread or the yield difference between corporate bonds and government bonds is getting smaller. So really the takeaway there is that it almost seems like investors aren't pricing in risk anymore for corporate credit. or corporate right. credit risk. So again, they're tightening, they're getting smaller. It seems to be getting smaller the more we go out. So again, that inverted yield curve is starting to correct or starting to flatten. And that's what we're seeing in the difference between corporate bonds and government bonds right now.
Pref shares, a topic we've talked about several podcasts ago. I think we had a special episode on prefs. And I know, a lot of us, I'll say suffered. We saw in our statements some negative numbers we're not used to seeing in terms of pref shares. Looks like some sanity has come back. Maybe you could talk a bit about that.
That's a great way to say it, Mike. Yeah, preferreds have been strong as of late. You're spot on. So I would even sort of extend that, Mike, to any sort of a dividend theme. Seems to be back in favor now. So you're spot on. When we were talking even, say, a year ago, anything sort of a dividend theme seemed to be in the negative camp. So investors really didn't like that as rates were increasing. But now that rates have, finally gone the other way and they're starting to decrease, investors seem interested again in those dividend yields and those strong dividend yields and those growing dividend yields. So yeah, the whole dividend theme, including preferred shares, has been really strong as of late. So we hope that continues.
Nice. So let's shift from the macroeconomic view and interest rates and bring it back to the equity markets. What are we seeing on that side of the ledger?
Yep. So drilling down into that one. So yeah, July's been strong, basically across all asset classes. Mike, I would say all performance been good across everything, whether it be bonds, preferred shares, the REIT market's been strong. The equity markets, as you mentioned, have been strong across all geographies, really. So it's really been a strong July. Actually, Canada outpaced the S&P 500 in the month of July, which is, simply something we spoke about here earlier. And I think investors are just paring back some of that maybe frothiness, to use that word in the tech names, maybe taking some profits off the table and going into the less expensive sectors or some of those dividend themes like utility stocks and banks. So again, that's very good for the Canadian market. So I think we're just seeing some of that shift, if you will, that rotation out of one type of investment into the other. But to your point, if we back up a little bit and look at the June numbers, it was almost the opposite. So the S&P 500 was quite a bit stronger than Canada. We were pretty flat. And even the NASDAQ markets had a very strong quarter. So it was almost the mirror image of that heading into the quarter end as of the end of June.
Last time we talked about the Magnificent Seven and how that was shifting to the Magnificent Four. Any more observations there?
Yeah, that continues. All eyes, remain on the AI theme. I'll sort of say it that way, but artificial intelligence continues to be big. But we are seeing some shifting towards the earnings growth of the Mag 7, Mike, and that's what you're referring to. We talked about that last time and where the valuation's getting a little bit strong. So they're all starting to report now. So all eyes out there will be on the Magnificent 7 to see what their numbers look like. But in fact, if you look at the end of Q3, consensus predictions are that earnings growth rate of the Mag 7 will be the same as the other 493 companies.
Okay.
So the takeaway there is it's starting to slow in those seven companies, but.
Right.
But yes, the traditional name known as the Magnificent Seven, to your point, it's turning into the Fabulous Four. And really that's because those four have been hitting all time highs in their stock prices earlier this year.
Right.
But it's interesting if we sort of drill down there, because the point you're hitting at it is a good one. So even if you say the top 10 names, just to kind of keep it simple, as of right now, they represent about 37% of the S&P 500 in terms of market capitalization. So if you took all the valuations of the stocks and sort of added them up, they would represent 37% of the entire S&P 500. But yet when you look at it from the earnings perspective, it's a full 10% below that. So they only represent 27% of earnings, but they make up 37% of the actual market cap. So it just goes to show how those names were bid up in terms of valuations, and investors are just willing to pay more for those companies for growth or for AI themes.
For possible growth. That's the risk.
Yeah. And not that they're not bad companies. Some of them do warrant a premium valuation, no doubt about that. We even want them in the portfolios, but they're just not cheap to buy relative to the rest of the market. And that's what investors have to keep an eye on.
So if we look at the market from a long-term perspective, look at long-term averages from a valuation perspective, how was the last quarter?
Yeah, and I'd almost keep going with that theme, Mike. So if we look at the market across the spectrum, they're trading at about 21 times.
Okay.
And if you look at sort of a 30-year average, it's about 16 and a half. And again, I'm using rounded numbers there. But if you strip out those Magnificent Seven, they alone trade about 30 times. So one would say if you sort of strip those out, what does it look right? So the rest of the S&P names are about 17 and a half times, which is much, much more in line to the historical figures.
Right. So if if and or when there's a correction, it's possibly just with the, well, we can't predict anything, but possibly you see a correction with the big seven, possibly.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
They're priced per perfection, to use that phrase. So any sort of a hiccup in terms of earnings or softness in their predictions or even forward guidance, we'll see some volatility in those types of names for sure.
So that was a view from the U.S. perspective. How, from a valuation, what are we seeing in some other geographies in those markets? Similar type valuations, or do we see some deals to be had? Or at least from an overall market perspective, from a valuation view.
It would be better valuation, Mike. So yeah, that's a great point. So if we look at the American market, it's still more expensive, even if you sort of strip out that Mag 7 effect, if you will. You know, if we look at Canada and we look at the rest of the world, it's about 14 times or basically the same number. So again, you're comparing that 14 times to 17 and a half times. So still a premium on the U.S. market. But if you strip out the Mag 7, it is a much closer comparison, that's for sure.
Okay, interesting. Other observation, I know we had a nice call with the whole PM team, and we were talking about the amount of cash sitting on the sidelines. Why don't you talk about that trend?
Yeah, that's one that we kind of keep an eye on. It's one of our, you know, tools in the toolbox, to use that phrase that we look at. So yeah, what that's referring to, Mike, is the amount of money sitting on the sideline in money market funds.
Okay.
And so right now we're setting a record. So it's $6 trillion, believe it or not, is sitting in money market funds. And I must admit, it wasn't that long ago we were looking at this and it hit a record of $4 trillion. And that was during COVID. So the fact that we're up another, say, 50% in 3 years is quite eye-opening, to be honest. So that probably is more just people putting money into short-term things like money market funds when all of a sudden interest rates were decent. So as interest rates were rising, you might as well make, say, 5% on your money as opposed to literally earning nothing. But interesting is now that we move forward, when rates are starting to fall, that's a lot of money to go somewhere, Mike. So whether that's into bonds or into stocks or into preferred shares, all the things we spoke about, that's a lot of money that could move into something else now that rates are falling. So again, it's just something to keep an eye on. If there's that sort of money on the sidelines, that bodes well for other asset classes.
Interesting. If and or when, I say that a lot, but if and or when there is a market correction, perhaps it could be short-lived with that much money sitting on the sidelines. So
Correct.
No guarantees, obviously. Joel, thanks so much for this.
You're welcome. Anytime.
As always, folks, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to your accounting firm financial advisor, reach out to your Tricert Investment Counsel portfolio manager, or don't hesitate to reach out to myself. Take care.